Thank you very much for that introduction. It's a pleasure to be here and on the same presentation with Richard, who's devoted, I think, most of his life the last 3 years to this, or at least a great portion of it, and Jennifer, who so nicely presented the norming phase. My role started even before the contract was let as one of those NIH 15 to 20 people that would meet every 2 weeks to a month and telephone calls and so forth, trying to figure out how to solicit this enterprise. In other words, how to say what we meant by the contract. And then we had the pleasure to just keep from there, once the contract was awarded, working in the developmental phase. So I've spent quite a bit of time working with the individual teams in the sensory area, as other people have with other teams. And I'm going to tell you about those today. Of course, as the other speakers, I too have nothing to no relationships to disclose. So here, again, is a overview of the sensory domain teams. And I only made a slight change to this slide. I put audition and vestibular. I don't know if I can show, audition and vestibular together because they all come from the ear, basically. And smell and taste together, it's typical. And vision and somatosensation are kind of beyond my area, but I'll tell you a little bit about them as well. So this has been gone over before, but clearly each team had to decide on a definition and spent a lot of time identifying what tools were available and deciding whether they would work in the context we needed, i.e. Easy to perform in 5 or up to 7 minutes by a person that we call inexperienced, but someone who could be trained, a health technician type person. It had to be a valid, reliable measure. And then, of course, many of us were as interested in the shed as the toolbox, because this is a wonderful opportunity to build on the expertise of the team members and develop what really were a reasonable composite. No one sensory measure could capture that sense, but the shed would give you an overview. Okay, and you've heard about the rest of this. So I'll start with audition. And it's probably wise that I start there because I've had more experience in the last 18 years in the Institute in the audition area. And of the Institute activities, audition is about 50% of it. So it's natural for me. The toolbox measure, after considering various options, decided that we wanted to measure pure tone thresholds. And it's interesting that I think back in the 30s when people were developing audition tests, they thought, well, yeah, I'll measure pure tone thresholds first, but we're quickly going to get beyond that. Well, interestingly enough, they didn't quickly get beyond that. We are still measuring pure tone thresholds. You can see, and if you know this field, a lot of experts were involved in the preparation of this material. And ultimately, what has been chosen will be to measure these thresholds, not as in NHANES, where you have the benefit of a dedicated space with a soundproof booth. We can't have that benefit. So we're going to use these noise-canceling Sennheiser headphones linked with a personal computer and obtain thresholds in each ear. Actually, this is the old slide. Each ear, and with modifications for children to do less. And it can be done in a limited amount of time, and we hope that it'll be successful. The tool shed measures, we're going to include things such as word and noise, the hearing handicap inventory for adults and elderly, which is a clinical measure that a lot of people use when people come in complaining of, or if they don't even know that they have a hearing problem, would help identify they may have one. Tympanometry is particularly useful for children, but we even do it with adults to learn if there's a middle ear issue that tympanometry could reveal. Now, I've inserted some other slides. This is not toolbox. This is to give you an idea, well, what else is out there with the National Health Examination Survey? So I've been involved in this. It was just coming onto the Institute as they were completing the NHANES 3, where hearing was measured in children 6 to 19. After that, we were able to get adults tested in 1999 to 2004, and then transition to do older adults, 70 and above, as well as adolescents since that time period. Next year, in 2011, we'll go back to testing adults again. But anyway, you can see that in NHANES, we don't do the whole age spectrum. There's so much competition for time in NHANES, we have to limit our testing in each round. The other area in which, say, the Institute collects data, and we have these data for the country, is in questionnaires. And I want to focus, some mention was made by Jennifer of the questions. It's nice to have the exams, but you also need some questions to understand what the complaint may be or what the person can tell you about their condition. So we have actually increased the questions in the health interview survey for hearing in 2007 to 54 questions. And because there was such a lack of balance, dizziness information in national statistics, we did a whole supplement on that in 2008. Okay, what do you learn from these things? Well, you can clearly learn with different definitions of hearing loss. You learn about tinnitus, which is a major public health issue for a lot of people, ringing in their ears. How often people seek health care, whether or not they use hearing protection when exposed to loud noise, to the extent they use hearing aids. And, you know, the NHANES data we've recently published on the association of hearing loss with diabetes. So this, you know, we really didn't know the sample would be large enough to show this, but it was pretty conclusive. The literature was mixed, but I think the NHANES may have settled the issue. There is hearing loss associated with diabetes. Okay, so clearly by having this and expanding it beyond the NHANES, the toolbox can reveal lots of information for epidemiologic and public health purposes. You may have some interest. Well, what are we expecting to happen? Well, I show this just so you get an idea. An awful lot of the sensory domains will be like this. The prevalence will increase with age. And you can see here, this is a kind of an old slide, but it increases greatly with age. And so we'll have to have norms by age. So we have used here a standard that's appropriate for a 20-year-old, hearing loss no greater than 25 dB. Across those four frequencies. For an older person wondering if they could benefit from a hearing aid, that would probably rise to 35 dB, in which case they might think of a hearing aid, typically. So we will have standards, and I also want to say, you know, Congress asked this question. Why? What is the cause of hearing loss? And the only way we can answer it is by asking the question. And this is the type of information that we get when we do ask it. But we need to marry this. We need to know much better. And, of course, an awful lot of this they don't know. Some other cause or the cause they give may not. Yeah, of course, they're older, so they say age. Okay, now I'm moving quickly into the other domains. Vision. And the main toolbox measure will be static visual acuity. But there will also be the functional impact in the supplementary measures. Again, you can see the people that participated. Again, you all are familiar, I think, with these tests. It gives you an idea. And health-related quality of life measure. There are 53 items. I know we had some discussion about just even measuring color vision. Turns out it's not as easy as you'd think. I mean, I thought it was going to be easy. But we ask about it, so we'll learn something about it. Somatosensation. Here we have two measures, actually, that fall within this area, the tactile discrimination and then self-reported pain and perhaps another one here that will come in. And you can see here is the tactile discrimination test. Get a vision, get a sense of it. Three plates with ridges. The objective is to find which one of them feels different to the subject. The pain. Self-reported pain, and there's some scaling going on here. And here is a mention of the four items for kinesthesia. Well, taste. This is an area that also falls within the purview of my institute. And we are currently working with the NHANES folks. We're going to have piloted both smell and taste. So this is an area that I have had particular interest in. And the development of the toolbox, I think without it, we wouldn't be prepared at this point to go forward with NHANES. So this really has boosted this effort, and I think we may continue to learn from the two as we proceed. So without giving a lot of background on this, the toolbox measure is a measure of salt, and bitter, quinine, for subjects above 12 years of age, and perhaps prop, which many of you may know as a genetic trait, which may have a lot of influence on other tastes, sensations, and also dietary preference, perhaps. For the younger subjects, it seemed we had, this is one area where we had to break and use a different approach for children. And the reason, as I'll show in a minute, was probably the way we have to assess or measure taste. We thought that children could do the sucrose preference approach, but probably not the scaling needed for the toolbox measure. All right, so we're doing both a regional, which by that we mean tongue tip, as well as a whole mouth taste test. And here is the scaling. This method has been developed over years and has been shown by various people to be superior to, say, a 10-point scale or a 9-point scale or some other approach. It's a labeled magnitude scale, and it's also been validated against what used to be the standard, and it often is. For example, you can give a series of tones, loudness of tones, and you can measure the intensity of a taste according to how that corresponds to how loud the sound is. And that was the old, and takes a lot of time, way to measure intensity. This is a replacement for that kind of test. Okay. Probe is something that we're interested in and that will also be used. I'll just mention that briefly. For the children in taste, they're going to have a series of solutions to test, taste, and they're going to be asked which one do they like better, and ultimately end up with a solution that for each one, each person. And this has been used at Monell and other places and appears to work successfully, has been piloted. Okay, finally, vestibular balance. There's also motor and other areas that I'm not going to touch on today. But there are two tests, and these were done in combination with the vision team and sensory and the motor team, which is a whole different domain. The dynamic visual acuity test and the multi-condition balance accelerometry measure using a modified Romberg stances. Now, the balance testing we've done in the NHANES is a very simplified version of this BAM. In fact, there's no accelerometer at all. It's just can you or can you not do the different stances in the Romberg test. This is an illustration for the dynamic visual acuity measure. So they do it static and then they do the dynamic. The static, of course, is for the vision test. The dynamic is to get at how well people see, for example, to drive. If they're moving, their head moves, do they catch the sign? Do they see the speed limit? Do they see whatever? So if a person has a deficit in that area, it's quite a disability. This will be an assessment of that kind of thing. And basically what you're looking at is how well what line they can read with their glasses on, best corrected vision, and then when they're moving their head, can they still read that line, or is it a line above that, or two lines above that, or even higher? That's the way the measure is. This device, which Richard mentioned, instead of costing $100,000 or something, is down to around $400 now, and will be a good measure for the Romberg test. Sway, under six conditions, is very complete, and the data should be quite interesting and useful. You can get a sense that with age, of course, performance will get worse. However, for the very young, it'll get better. Okay, then olfaction, smell. The toolbox measure, it will be 10 items for adults 10 to 85, and be fewer, 6, for children 3 to 9. It will be validated, however, against the University of Pennsylvania Smell Identification Test, which has 4 booklets and is around 40 items. You can see the team of people that worked on this. The child version, these are the odorants, encapsulated, scratch and sniff, lemon, Play-Doh, chocolate, cinnamon, bubblegum, popcorn, easily recognizable. And in the adult version, besides those six, there will be coffee, smoke, natural gas, and flour. Yeah, I think I went back. Okay. And in addition, which I think is quite nice, people will have a visual cue. Because there is a cognitive load to doing smell testing if it's just all verbal. And this will make it easier, I think, for people to help identify. So, for example, it'll be a forced choice among four possibilities. Odor 9 happened to be, if you went back and looked, the natural gas, mercaptan, and that would be the correct choice. For example, these odors will be presented like on the left here, and they'll be validated against the The University of Pennsylvania, as I already said. So anyway, these are all going to be computerized, easy to use. We think they're valid, reliable tests. They've been individually developed and can stand alone. And most can be done for children 6 and above, although we have developed special modifications for people, children 3 to 5. So that's the end of my talk. Thank you.
Okay. I think one point to be made, in looking at the sheets that you picked up at the beginning of the session, that sensory looms large, and there are 16 or 17 odd instruments of the entire package of 48 that are from that area. But I will also confess to the fact that Howard is a ringer in that he's a co-conspirator with me for pulling the session together. So I thought not only because of the number of instruments that were represented, but also because using it, it serves as an example. And I think one of the things that may come up in discussion, and Richard may say a bit more about, is how some of the other domains have progressed and his feelings about how cognition, emotion, and motor have come along in very much the same way with some of their areas of interest. Okay, we're doing well on time. And we have a discussion built into this, a discuss ant, and then we will be available for question and answer, as I said earlier. So joining the panel as discussant is Bob Wallace, professor of epidemiology and internal medicine at the University of Iowa Colleges of Public Health and Medicine, and director of the university's Center on Aging. Very long history with the National Institute on Aging, among other institutes. He's been a member of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force and the National Advisory Council on Aging of the National Institutes of Health, and a member of the Institute of Medicine, and chairs the IOM's Board on Health Promotion Disease Prevention, and is current chair of the Board of Health of Select Populations. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay, particularly, he's asked me not to say more, but I'm going to say one other thing, and that is that Bob's research interests are in clinical and population epidemiology and extensive experience in the conduct of both observational cohort studies of older persons and clinical trials. And finally, and I think it's important to realize the breadth of the work that Bob's done, he's a principal investigator for the Women's Health Initiative, co-principal investigator of Health and Retirement Study, and co-investigator of the National Health and Aging Trend Study, all of which are ongoing. The best way to cut this off is how? You don't need this thing up there. So what is the best way to?
We can get rid of it.
Hit escape will do it before, yes.
There you go.
Good.
Thank you, Sam. What I'd like to do quickly is make some comments, and I'm going to talk to my colleagues along the way just to be certain that I don't misrepresent it. And then the things that I do misrepresent, they'll tell me about anyway. I actually have a disclosure. I'm not totally unbiased. I was once part of the Toolbox team, and with regrets, left it mainly because I didn't have any time, and Sam explained that to you. I think this work is very important, and I'm delighted to see it progress. I've seen many of these tests in population studies before. But I think the improved measurement accuracy, improved precision, improved instruments, new ideas are all very, very important. And I think that all of this is, in fact, to the good. I think it will increase psychological, physiological testing in population studies, and it should. I think it's great that it's related to outcomes, such as health-related quality of life. And if I understood Jennifer correctly, you're actually experimenting with internet surveys, which I is that. Oh, not in the norming. Okay, but I think you need to go there at some point because a lot of the in-person stuff is just going to get to be very expensive, and a lot of research groups are experimenting with internet techniques. I think cohort studies need to be stable over time, and I'm really glad that. That some of the reliability work and the learning issues are being addressed. I can tell you, though, that in our Women's Health Initiative hormone trial that we actually saw learning effects of cognitive tests, not unlike the ones that are being done here over 3 years, okay, that our participants continued to get better over a period of time. And then finally, the hormones that we gave them kicked in and started to make it worse. But nonetheless, I hope at some point you will retain cohorts for longer periods of time because I think there are learning issues that do continue. I didn't hear anyone say it, and I know you know all of this, but observer variation in all of these tests is important to us, and we'd like to have some kind of an estimate of observer variation for those of us who are in the field. That's sort of where I'm coming from in all of this. I think I'm amused, Richard, that a lot of the clinicians want these tests back, and I think it's back because so many things that we do in epidemiology actually came from clinical observation and clinical experimentation, and so now it's come full circle, and I think that's great, and I think you'll give them something better than they gave you, actually, in those terms. I also think, I don't know if you're considering clinical trials, but since I do some of those as well, I can see a lot of applications where you actually have more time and more rigor and to do these studies, actually, than in a lot of population studies. Okay, so let's assume that we have great tests and so forth, and I just want to talk about some of the things that in fact the toolbox teams are not doing because it's not exactly anything that they can control. So there's measurement error that's not due to that they won't take into account, and I've listed some for myself. One is the environmental context where population studies are done. So if you're in a house on a noisy street, that's going to make audiometry a little bit difficult, and there are just going to be a lot of distractions that come with all population studies, and I think we'll just have to live with that. I think we see a lot of people in real life who are just not motivated, and some of these tests require motivation and to do the best job that they can do, and so there will be host factors that I think will be very difficult to deal with, although you may see some of those people in your norming studies as well. An old saw in survey research, of course, is the ordering of items. And so how these items are packaged is going to be important, so-called response variables that, in fact, are going to be important to all of this. And then there's just the overall response burden. So I mostly do population studies of older people, and I'd love to do every single thing I've heard here today. But it'll take me a long time, and I don't have that time. And one of the studies that Sam mentioned that I do, the health and retirement study, spends 30 minutes on family economic status, for example. And so I just simply am not going to have time to do all the wonderful things that I want to do. So I'm going to have to do some picking and choosing and bundling and so forth. And so I'd like to know how those relate to each other when I'm only doing 30% of the tests and that sort of thing. And I hope it'll come to that. The response burden, again, is important, but so are the participation rates. So all of us in survey research and EPI have a problem with participation, and it's getting worse. I think most of you who are interested in that know that. And so we'll just hope that the surveys that you do, the norming surveys that you do, will in fact be as representative as they can possibly be. I think that's very, very important, because it's just a fact of survey life. One more concern that I have, that I've faced over the years, is in the gizmos that you're using, of course they break, and the companies may not be there to fix it. And so I think you have to worry about that sort of thing, because I want to have the same measurement year after year in my populations to, in fact, see what happens. So the science, finally, then the science has to be kept modern, and tests go in and out of fashion. I've seen that. There are newer, more elegant tests that are done. So I think the work is never done, and I don't think there's ever going to be a fixed set, because somebody will come along with a better test. And then we'll all have to evaluate it. You are trying to hook up all of your tests to computers, and I think that's good. And I think an informatics interface on everything that you could do is really important to all of this. And I think that's something that just needs to be done, if for no other reason than to save time, both during the data collection and then after the data collection. In the end, though, I think the toolbox will be effective or not, depending on whether it's used. And I'm hoping it will, and I'm hoping that it'll be pragmatic enough and quick enough and flexible enough to make it all go. So thank you.
Thanks, Bob. I'd like the four folks to come up to the table, and maybe a good way to begin would be, because I'm anxious to also get some questions from the audience, is to ask Richard and Jen and Howard to respond to some of the points briefly that Bob has raised, because there are a couple of things there that I know have vexed people throughout the period of development of these tests in the last 3 years. And Bob has hit on a couple of points that have been particularly part of this give and take that I've talked about, but maybe starting with Richard, say a few things about Bob's points.
I took a bunch of notes. I'll go fast. We'll see here. First of all, telehealth and online. So the emotional health measures will be available online actually prior to the release of the toolbox altogether. So because they could be done, they're both fixed length surveys and adaptive tests, and we have technology that runs online to make those available shortly. We have had several inquiries if we could run the cognition battery using telehealth remotely, and we did develop it so it could be converted to telehealth, so that a person could take the instruments remotely, probably in a video chat type session, so that a person, for instance, there's a reading fluency test, you have to listen to the person read. You need you need the test administrator remotely on the phone, but we do believe all the tests could be given that way. All of the cognition measures were developed to work within an internet frame, so that they are all, when you're actually running them on a standalone computer, you're actually running them within an internet session. It may not appear to you that way, but technologically that's what's going on. I'll skip around a little bit. Everything, we're well aware, I've been in technology assessment development my whole career, and everything changes every day. We try very much to be very close to bleeding edge in our current development use of technology, so that we'll last as long as we can on that side, and work with constructs that should, albeit that technology will change over time. If an instrument changes, it should be measuring the same thing, it'll go forward. We do have computer interfaces for absolutely every single one of the tests, so that a person taking this, even if it's a motor assessment, the timer is built into the computer, or a person can type in the values. The balance assessment goes by a Bluetooth wireless into the computer, so it completely captures all the waveform forms from the balancing. It's actually a great test to watch in development, because that little innocent-looking belt that people are wearing measures forward and back front, side-to-side back front postural sway, and their graph. I would swear the person's standing still, and these graphics are going all over the place. So we're capturing all that. Now, if I'm a cognition researcher, I could give a hoot about what these graphs show, and so there'd be a summary measure that you could use in a long-term study. But if you're a person who's very interested in getting down to the nitty-gritty, all the raw data is preserved for all these tests, so that as a researcher, you can get at them. And indeed, relative to the batteries versus choosing an individual test, we're well aware. I mean, we...
I know you were.
No, but we're aware, what came out, and we could do this, I've done this session for 8 hours, this exact same session with hundreds of people in the room, going through each and every test. Because frankly, there is a development team for each of these tests. They spent hundreds and hundreds of hours. They've had arguments among themselves, arguments with every one of those specialty teams I showed, arguments back with me when they said, you know, Richard, we could really use 9 minutes for our test. And my trying not to laugh every single time, each group would call me on the phone or say, I know your mother, or something like that. Because it wasn't meant to be. One of our goals is to keep it short. But we also recognized early on that most of these people develop these tests and they're thinking afterwards, I'm going to use this. So we developed everything, including scoring, over time, so they could be given individually without having to be given within a large battery framework. Although the individual release of the tests, with the exception of emotional health, are probably about a year and a half out. We have to get the domain release out there first. But all the tests we're developing will also be given individually.
Howard, Jen, any particular comment?
I think answer that there's a comment about order effects. I think for the norming study, we're planning on randomizing the order of the domains. So some people will get emotion first, right? And some people will get cognition first, so that those norms that we publish will be sort of averaged across order effects. So people who were rushed when they got the cognition domain versus people who were really tired and not paying attention. And I think within domains, for most of the domains, the order of the tests is fixed, except for the emotional health domain, because that's all a computer-based questionnaire. So it's very easy for the computer to just randomize the order of the different subdomains within emotion.
And just the footnote, because this is something that we all discussed, I think sensory may not have to be last. I mean, so often in studies I've been involved in, you test the hearing of a five-year-old after he's been put through 2.5 hours of testing. You know, do you have his attention, really? We don't want that to be the case. All right.
Okay. Bob, any additional points, or can we open it up? Questions from folks? Ma'am.
Question about the norming. You said that I'm interested in the target population in the sample. Target population, you said that it had to do with people dwelling in community. So who is this a national household survey or a sample?
It's not. We tried to make it that, but funding and timeline-wise, it wasn't going to fit. So we're using some existing recruitment databases of people who have agreed to participate in studies and sampling from that.
And those are households, or they're non-institutional, non-military?
Correct.
But in households, not homeless, not?
Correct. Okay. Not in nursing homes.
And about the sample, these established or existing databases, can you tell me anything about those?
It's a vendor we're using.
It's probably based on marketing research, using marketing research firms, which is really how the WACE, for instance, was originally. Norms were constructed, and our EpiBiostat team was diligent in trying to get us to do a national random sample, and we thought we were there, but between limitations on the contract mechanism we're under and limitations in funding available for the neuroscience blueprint, that was not meant to be. And so we took a step back with methodology. Again, the quote-unquote competitive instruments against which these have been done using marketing research databases. That's how the National Norms for those instruments are. And for about 80% of the instruments, our sheer sample size, albeit not random, is sometimes 10 times greater. What are the current norms for olfaction based on sample size of 300, I think? We'll have sample size of 5,600. So we know it's not perfect. We think it's, for the most part, better than anything else that's out there. And then we leave it to everybody in the room to, you know, take this out there and use it in the samples where it's
not on phone numbers?
Oh, that's correct. Yeah.
That would be Synapsis. Okay.
Yeah, that, right, right. Yeah, the phone numbers. I mean, the latest research we've used for emotional health is that we get a better, that the internet paneling, highly restricted, very scientifically based, and using existing databases, that people have gotten better, as good if not better. As you know, phone may be back up now as of the last couple of weeks, but you know, since you couldn't call cell phone users, you're missing a whole demographic for a while there.
Right.
So no, we even in our random plans, we weren't going there. We were going to use mail. We're not.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, sir?
Could you tell more about the emotional domain? You didn't tell much about that. Who the leaders of it were, and where the item pools tend to come from, and what the subdomains are.
Okay, so there are sheets at the back. I don't think you got one, but there's a sheet out there with all the pieces. The emotional health domains were originally selected. I don't have a sheet in front of me. Bob, can I handle it? Thank you. Yeah, thanks so much, Sam. The actual areas selected were primarily done by research and then by